SBS Radio.
I have three children. My eldest daughter was born in 2006 and I was 23 years old when I had her. In 2009, I fell pregnant with twins. This was almost 12 years ago when I first became a mum. There were nowhere near the resources or the education that we have now. I didn't have anyone speak to me about postnatal depression, as it was called back then. What are the warning signs and the symptoms? And because of my lived experience, because of the fact that I was Indigenous and had certain life experiences, that I was actually at a higher risk of developing postnatal depression. I now know that I had postnatal depression symptoms with my first child, but the symptoms weren't bad enough to derail me. I just put it down to, yep, I'm a first-time mum, it's the baby blues, but it was much more than that. When I had my twins, I spiraled very quickly into much more severe symptoms. So I started to have really down days, low energy, fatigue. I didn't have the attachment to the twins that you read about in books and that you see in movies and stuff like that. So I thought there was something really wrong with me, that I was abnormal. It wasn't until I started having images of hurting the twins. So I'd slip into these waking nightmares or these episodes where we almost like watching a movie. I'd see myself throwing the babies or hurting the babies, and it really scared me. So I kept it to myself because I'm the second eldest of 17 siblings. I'm used to looking after other people. I'm not used to asking for help. So I really kept that to myself. I really spiraled until one night I'd had a particularly bad night. I was breastfeeding one of the babies and she wouldn't stop crying, and I slipped into one of those episodes. And it wasn't until her cries changed from one of pain, from one of discomfort to pain, that I actually started to squeeze her, and it shocked me. My husband was just walking through the door,
yeah,
and I shoved the baby at him and I took off to the doctors. And I'd avoided actually approaching any medical help at that point or reaching out for help because of impacts of the Stolen Generation and that historical trauma.
Yeah.
I was seriously concerned that if I told someone what I was experiencing, that someone would take my children from me.
Yeah.
So all of that stopped me from reaching out for help a lot earlier. And
what you went through is quite common, according to research, because it says that one in two parents who experience perinatal anxiety or depression, the majority don't even understand what it is and they don't seek support.
Well, I think too, that's partly our social conditioning. You see in movies, you see in photos and stuff like that, that you get this Hollywood version of parenting, and you're supposed to be, the expectation is that you're supposed to be intrinsically in love with your child. And if it doesn't go that way, you think something is wrong with you. And we still live in a society that mental health issues are, there's a stigma around it, and you don't want to admit that everything's not a fairy tale.
This toolkit has just been developed. How does it work?
It's an online questionnaire and resource. People can log on to the Panda website.
Yeah.
They can go and access this toolkit. Within the first day or so of the toolkit being released, Panda had a couple of hundred people access it. And now I think it's well into a couple of thousand people have already accessed this resource. So they're showing that this new toolkit is definitely something that is needed and people are accessing already.
Loved ones also get support through this toolkit. They know the right answers, how to actually recognize the symptoms and how to react and how to help the mothers and the parents dealing with this illness.
This new toolkit isn't just for new parents. It's also for the support people around them. So if you've got a friend or a daughter or a family member who's just had a child and you think that they may be at risk of developing perinatal depression or anxiety, you can actually go on to Panda and you can read the resource, you can look at the toolkit, and you can actually educate yourself around, okay, what are the signs and symptoms? How can I ask someone, how are they going? Like, what are the right questions to ask that can help me to support someone that I think may be at risk of developing these things?
Can you give us the website where one can just log on and find out more?
So you've got the Panda website, and they've also got a helpline as well. You also have other services like Lifeline. You've also got Beyond Blue. We've got a few different support things that you can go to and educate yourself. But there's also the phone line as well. And the phone line doesn't have to be for new parents. It can be for support people of new parents. There are specific support services out there for survivors of the stolen generation and for descendants of, like, children and grandchildren of people who were a part of the stolen generation.
Yeah.
But I think people, it's not well known that the wider impact, like a lot of people when they, if they haven't been involved with a family member or they haven't been a part or experienced the stolen generation, they think that it's historical, that it was something that happened 100 years ago, or they have this perception like it's historical. It's not. It's lived experience. Like, I have an auntie who was a part of the stolen generation.
Yeah.
And
you're being affected. It affects you.
It does. It affects you. There's a ripple effect. And the thing is that was their lived experience. They didn't know how to parent because they were taken from their families. They weren't raised with how to be a part of a family and all this sort of stuff. And then you have the whole thing of coming back to your community, trying to find out where your family are and everything else. And then you're also trying to function by having your own children. Your lived experience also impacts your ability to parent and how you raise your children. That comes down to a lot of the lived experience that we have, and that's why I think it was a genuine fear for me and why I didn't reach out for help. And when I did reach out for help, the first medical professional that I came across, and I told her everything that I'd been experiencing, her first response to me was, "Oh, I've noticed on your file that you're of Indigenous heritage, and I think now after what you've told us that maybe we need to call Child Protection to do a welfare check on your children, and maybe it would benefit you to spend time in a mental health hospital for respite." Now, for a person who had stopped herself from reaching out because I was frightened that I was going to lose my children, and that to be the first response that I received from someone who was supposed to be there to help me, through lack of education on her part and understanding, that she actually went straight to my risk factors. And after that, I've developed a severe mistrust of the medical profession, and I'm a higher functioning individual that's educated and everything, but that still traumatized me and triggered me that I didn't want to trust medical professionals in that space around my mental health and supporting me to get better.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Welcome back to NITV Radio. We're in conversation with Chantel Thompson, also known as the Barkindji Warrior. Chantel is sharing her experience dealing with perinatal depression and anxiety. She developed her own coping mechanism, undertaking jiu-jitsu and collecting world titles in the process. The Barkindji Warrior recommends the new online toolkit as a starting point to deal with perinatal depression and anxiety. She says from there, one can develop their own coping strategies or, like she did, seek professional mental health support. And as she says, seeking support did make a difference, helped her, saved her life and that of her children.
My children are very healthy. It's been a long journey of recovery, and it's not like it's something that I was able to say, yep, I'm finished now, I'm all healed. I've come to know I now have coping strategies. Depression is actually a part of my life. I have episodes where I sometimes sink back into my depression. It's not something that I go, oh yeah, I had depression and I'm all good and I'm all well again. For some people, that's their experience. For me, I have ongoing depression and mental health challenges, but I now know my triggers. I now know the risk factors, and I have coping strategies in place. I have key support people that I can call when I know I'm not coping and I know how to manage. But that's taken me 10 years to get to that point. It wasn't an overnight thing. And one of my coping things is that I started using physical exercise as a form of therapy. Yeah. I started doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu after the birth of my twins when I first got diagnosed with perinatal depression and anxiety. I used that as a way to get better, and that then led to me competing in Jiu-Jitsu, and I have gone on to become a 3-time world champion in my sport.
Yeah.
And I now use my story to help others, to break the stigma, to educate, but to also support people that may be experiencing the same thing I did, to let them know that they're not alone. And there are positive things that can come out the other side if you reach out for help and if you work towards getting better and learning to live with and manage your conditions rather than thinking that you are alone.
You went from really a very challenging health issue to becoming a world champion in a difficult sport, because I think it's not easy. It's very physical and very...
I think through my lived experience, I grew up grappling with life and with siblings and with issues. So learning to transition into a sport that's a grappling space sport, learning to strangle people and tap people out was just actually a natural progression for me. And to actually say that I can tap people out on the mats, it helped me learn to manage myself in day-to-day life. And it was a very physical education in learning to channel my negative energy. And I'm just grateful to say that because I did that, my children are still here and so am I.
Because you mentioned a very, very difficult situation. I thought, well, if you're squeezing your child very hard, the worst could have happened had your husband not walked in on you.
I can honestly say now, and I've only just been able to say this in the last couple of years, that if... I don't know what may have happened on that morning if my husband hadn't have walked in at that time.
Yeah.
But if I hadn't have found jiu-jitsu and I hadn't have reached out for support, I would have ended up killing myself, or I may have ended up killing myself and my children. People can say what they like, but I can empathise with mothers that have gone on to kill their children and themselves because of perinatal depression and stuff, because it's a real thing and it's a real illness. That was my story and that was my experience. I'm just grateful that I'm still here to now share that story, and I consider it my responsibility to share that story and to speak up about it, because there's a lot of people who can't articulate those things or don't have the capacity that I do, and I want them to know that they're not alone and that there's nothing to be ashamed of. Like, this was my story, and it was a whole compounding factors of my lived experience, but the inherited experience of being an Aboriginal woman in a country that still denies its heritage and its history. We live in a country that doesn't value or respect Indigenous culture and doesn't acknowledge the true history of what we've been through. That impacts on your identity. It impacts on who you are as a person and how you learn to value yourself and walk in the world as a woman, as an Aboriginal person, as a parent. We're trying to relearn culture. We're trying to reconnect with people and communities that are fractured and have internalized the impacts of colonization. So to carry all this, but also to then try and function in the everyday 21st century of providing for your family, building a career, and looking after wider community, I think are a lot of things that people just aren't aware of, the things that we have to do to be highly successful, functioning people, and that it's not easy, but at the end of the day, this is the reality of what we have to deal with to just be able to get out of bed and say, I'm here.
You are very strong, and you've overcome one of the toughest conditions, and I can only say, well, I can't even say congratulations. I don't know what to say. It's just an inspirational story you've shared there.
Thank you so much for giving me the time and the opportunity to share my story. I'm very grateful for these opportunities, and I hope that anyone listening to this knows that they're not alone, and that there is recovery, there is supports in place, and there's certainly people out there that care and can understand. And I strongly encourage you, if you're in that space or you know someone that's in that space, to reach out and to know that you're not alone and that things are changing.
SBS.com.au.